This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars episode number 30 was recorded on July 8th, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. All-Star Luke Groman is back with us today. Luke, what caught your attention recently?
Yeah, hey, Eric, thanks for having me back on. You know what grabbed my attention? I thought the reaction to last week's better-than-expected jobs numbers was very interesting.
Okay, what about them in particular got you the most interested?
You know, what got me the most interested was I thought most investors are focused on the wrong number, at least as it relates to Fed rate cut and the percentage chances of what the Fed will do.
Okay, how come that's the wrong thing to be focusing on?
Even as most of the focus in the mainstream financial media about the jobs numbers was about their effect on the odds of a 50 basis point cut in July, the effect it had on the dollar, effect it had on U.S. rates and U.S. equities, virtually no one was paid any attention to what I thought was arguably the most important number late last week. And more specifically, while most of financial media and FinTwit were focused on the jobs numbers, the spread of the Fed funds rate, or FFR, over interest on excess reserves, or IOER, has re-widened back to the highs going out on July 4th at 6 basis points, which is back to the 10-year highs seen back on May 1st that prompted the Fed to cut the IOER rate at that point, which really amounted to the first rate cut of this cycle. And so in plain English, what Fed funds over IOER moving back to the highs is telling us is that the global dollar shortage has begun getting more acute within the U.S. banking system again, that so-called excess reserves held at the Fed are not excess at all. So Fed funds over IOER, or interest on excess reserves, is telling us the U.S. banking system is, in aggregate, experiencing a shortage of dollar reserves. And critically, this is happening despite the fact that the U.S. debt ceiling means that U.S. Treasury is not sucking out dollar liquidity with new Treasury bill issuance and is actually adding to dollar liquidity by running down their cash balances, which basically amounts to a mini QE of sorts. And so Fed funds over IOER should not be back at the highs during the debt ceiling. And it tells us that the underlying dollar shortage is severe and intensifying. And despite all of this, as was the case with the Fed meeting a few weeks ago, there was basically no discussion in financial media, very little on FinTwit, about this move of Fed funds over IOER being right back to the highs, and certainly no discussion on why this is happening or what all of it means. And you know, the discussions on CNBC or Bloomberg or FinTwit about the Fed's actions really centered on the debate about whether the strong jobs numbers on Friday changed the outlook for Fed rate cuts, but there remains virtually no discussion about the true underlying cause of what's forcing the Fed's hand. And you know, the fact is that Fed funds is right back at 6 basis points over IOER, combined with the fact that I'm hearing virtually nothing about this and the aftermath of the stronger than expected jobs report suggests that, you know, the underlying reason the Fed needs to cut rates is still not widely understood. And that underlying reason is that U.S. federal deficits are crowding out the U.S. banking system in the absence of enough foreign central bank or foreign private sector purchases of treasuries. When you look at what, you know, when we talk about a dollar shortage in the U.S.'s own banking system, when you look at what's pulling dollar liquidity out of the banking system, it's an oversimplification. But, you know, why would I put large amounts of cash in a bank earning virtually zero when I can put that cash into a government money market fund, buying treasuries and earning 2% plus for essentially the same risk? And the punchline answer to that question is that as long as foreign central banks aren't buying net new treasuries and the foreign private sector is effectively being paid by prohibitively high FX hedging costs not to buy or not to roll treasuries on the margin, the U.S. private sector will have to keep growing its financing of the U.S. government. And what Fed funds over IOER is telling us is that the U.S. private sector does not have enough balance sheet to fund U.S. government deficits from this point, at least not without help from the Fed injecting new dollar liquidity. And so I've just found that this daisy chain of causality, that the Fed is cutting rates to help ease the stress of the U.S. private sector funding U.S. government deficits, remains poorly understood because it's been 70 years since U.S. deficits last mattered. And, you know, as we've long been saying, U.S. deficits began mattering again in 3Q14, which began the first time in 70 years that foreign central banks stopped sterilizing deficits, you know, which is just another word for growing treasury holdings on net. And, you know, in plain English, the Fed is effectively being forced to cut rates to help fund the U.S. government, which is ultimately not deflationary. It's really just a question of path.
Luke, your point on it's a question of path seems to me to be the key, though, isn't it? Because isn't it true that a U.S. dollar shortage becoming so acute that it's impacting the United States banking system? I mean, isn't that a positive for the U.S. dollar and a negative for risk, all other things being equal?
Yes, and mechanically, at least, that's exactly right. And that's why I say it's just a question of path, ultimately. You know, it's only positive for the dollar and negative for risk if you think that both the Fed and or the federal government are going to stand aside and let the dollar shortage hurt the U.S. government's ability to fund itself and or the U.S. banking system. And if the Fed and federal government stand aside, then all else equal, this dynamic that we just described before should drive the dollar to the moon and risk assets globally through the floor, so to speak.
Okay, so I swear Brent Johnson didn't put me up to this question. Why aren't you more concerned then about your negative view on the U.S. dollar and positive risk assets and gold and Bitcoin and so forth?
Eric, it's a great question. And the reason we remain positive on risk and negative on the dollar, positive on gold, Bitcoin, et cetera, is because as best we can tell, consensus understands and is already heavily positioned for this mechanical dollar shortage angle. And while consensus understands that a stronger dollar is bad for risk assets, it doesn't seem to be discussing two important factors we've discussed for a long time with FFTT subscribers. The first of these is that with U.S. equity market cap at 155% of GDP, and with IRS data showing that U.S. net capital gains plus taxable IRA distributions alone are at 200% roughly of annual personal consumption expenditure growth or PCE growth. And once you factor in that PCE is about two-thirds of GDP in the U.S., you come to the conclusion the stock market is effectively, you know, the two-thirds of the U.S. economy that's consumption in terms of a key growth driver. And so there's no nation on earth more sensitive and faster to a decline in asset prices than the U.S. economy, and as a result, the U.S. government. And this is the flip side to the observations I've seen a number of times that, you know, look how big the U.S. stock market is compared to all the other stock markets in the world. And so, you know, in plain English, if stocks start falling, the U.S. economy will get the worstest, the fastest, if you will. And this will then ripple through the global economy. And so that's sort of the first angle that I don't think is still well appreciated in terms of how the Fed might react. The second is that the Fed's aware that Fed funds over IOER is a problem, as evidenced by their early May cut to IOER once that Fed funds was 6 basis points over IOER. And you know, Fed funds is over IOER because the U.S. has a fiscal problem driven by the combination of too big of U.S. deficits and not enough foreign buying of treasuries. And that's resulting in U.S. deficits increasingly crowding out the U.S. banking system, driving Fed funds over IOER. And, you know, as I said before, this daisy chain of causality seems to remain poorly understood by most market participants. The flip side is, if you know, if I was hearing everywhere in financial media, CNBC, FinTwit, that you need to own stocks in gold and Bitcoin because the U.S. government has a fiscal problem that's increasingly crowding out the U.S. private sector, and that, you know, that rate cuts are priced into every meeting for the next 12 plus months, and those are effectively going to be the Fed financing U.S. government deficits, or if I was even hearing that the U.S. equity markets effectively are the U.S. consumer economy, so stocks can't be allowed to fall very much, you know, I'd probably be more concerned about positioning and risk assets. But instead, what I hear most about are the first order mechanical impacts of the dollar shortage that are being manifested in Fed funds over IOER, driving the dollar much higher, leading the people to be cautious on risk, you know, while gold and Bitcoin remain really underowned. So there's just, you know, there's just so few people openly discussing these U.S. fiscal dynamics and how they're manifesting in the markets today, now, you know, even as Fed funds over IOER is effectively, you know, what I've called a tea whistle that's, you know, really shrilly warning that the problems are acute and that the problems are here today.
Okay, so how do you expect things to play out from here?
It's a great question. I think we're rapidly coming to a critical moment in markets, so I don't think we're going to have to wait long until I'm proven either right or very wrong. And, you know, if I'm wrong and the dollar spikes and risk assets fall off sharply, I don't think that'll last for more than a couple months until the Fed is forced to renew QE and what will likely be truly face-peeling monthly amounts, as we like to say. I mean, I can get to $200 to $300 billion a month in QE in our model without really breaking a sweat. And so, you know, with that as context, I think there's three most likely paths from here. You know, the first path is that the Fed needs to cut rates, and badly. And so to be clear, Fed doesn't cut rates for some reason and keep cutting rates in ensuing meetings, it's likely to be very bad for risk assets, and it's likely to be bad for emerging markets and commodities, and you know, while likely being very positive for the dollar, and we'll be very wrong about our bullish call, you know, at least for a couple of months. Path two, which is really our base case, is you know, as the Fed rate cuts continue or progress, or if the Fed does cut rates by 50 basis points in July, you know, we think it will increasingly force a rethink among a quorum of market participants, which will likely lead to increased understanding that the Fed's effectively cutting rates to supply the U.S. private sector with the, you know, with the liquidity needed to finance U.S. government deficits. And as more investors realize this, we think this will likely be very positive for risk assets and negative for the dollar, with emerging markets, gold, Bitcoin, and commodities likely doing well. You know, path three is sort of the, I think, the worst case, which is, you know, if the Fed delays rate cuts that the market is priced in and the U.S. government raises the debt ceiling, we could see a 4Q18 on steroids outcome in risk markets and in FX markets as a bolus of U.S. Treasury bill issuance hits the market. At the same time, the Treasury is rebuilding cash balances, and that will just suck out massive quantities of dollars into an already problematic dollar liquidity situation. And so, you know, we're cognizant that it is possible to pass number one or number three play out in the second half of 2019. But our bet, and like I said before, our base case is that the Fed learned from 4Q18 and that markets are reflexive. So even if we do get, you know, a 4Q18 like sell-off, it's likely to be of even shorter duration than 4Q18, with the Fed quickly responding to any problems. And I know it's intellectually offensive on some level, you know, the Fed responding to problems this way, but the unprecedented U.S. federal deficit situation will demand a quick Fed response. And as we noted before, you know, the urgency of this U.S. fiscal situation remains poorly understood by most market participants, in our view. And so the bottom line is that if the Fed doesn't provide enough dollar liquidity fast enough, you know, the resultant action we think will likely be very difficult to trade. I mean, like trying to trade 4Q18 and 1Q19, except possibly down faster and back up faster. And so our bet remains that the Fed is pinned into a corner. And this might especially actually be even more true now that Trump has continued to hammer on them that they don't know what they're doing, right? You know, if the Fed doesn't supply the needed dollar liquidity and markets tank, as they likely will if the Fed doesn't supply this liquidity, you know, the Fed's only going to be making Trump's case for him that they don't know what they're doing. And so if the Fed supplies liquidity, markets continue rising, then the Fed will be able to claim proficiency and Trump will get what he wants. So, you know, ultimately, since the political reality is that U.S. deficits are likely only going to grow structurally, our view is that at some point in second half 19, a quorum of investors are going to realize what's happening here, you know, that the Fed's effectively being forced to finance U.S. government deficits sort of one or two steps removed. And markets will start to react accordingly, you know, at a time when positioning is overweight dollars and treasuries and underweight both risk assets and gold and Bitcoin, you know, per a variety of portfolio manager surveys on positioning that we follow.
Okay, Luke, what's the bottom line as you look across markets?
You know, Eric, well, back on May 28th on Macro Voices All-Stars, you know, we said the punchline is that U.S. deficits are likely going to force the Fed to inject dollar liquidity in increasing amounts, likely no later than early 2020 and quite possibly sooner, effectively in order to end a worsening dollar shortage in the U.S.'s own banking system that's being caused by structurally rising U.S. deficits in the face of a foreign buying strike of some measure of treasuries by both foreign central banks and foreign private sector investors. And quite possibly sooner than early 2020, you know, we think has now become quite probably sooner than early 2020, but our conclusions, you know, still remain the same. We remain bullish on gold, Bitcoin, risk assets, you know, equities in the U.S. and abroad, and we're still negative on the dollar.
Well, Luke, I can't thank you enough for another fantastic All-Stars interview. We'll look forward to an update in a couple of weeks.
Thank you very much for having me on, Eric. Always great catching up.
It's my pleasure. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly Research Roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week, free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.